Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to this edition of the Anthony Johnson Show. It's good to be back. I hope everybody's been enjoying their weekend, and you made sure you put your clocks forward. That means we lose an hour of sleep. That's always amazing to me. You lose an hour of sleep, and then, you know, when you have to put them back, you gain an hour of sleep. I don't know the difference. I mean, my body doesn't really respond to either or. I sleep very little, so it doesn't benefit nor affect me negatively either way. But I hope everyone is having a good weekend, and you know, we can see the light at the end of the tunnel with the pandemic, ladies and gentlemen. You know, I would say to everybody, every person in this country, just stay longer. Let's follow these protocols, these basic life-saving protocols. Continue practicing social distancing. Wash those hands and wear those damn masks. Now, we understand places like Texas and Mississippi, they're, you know, Oklahoma, Montana, they're discarding them. But I say for the rest of us, please, wear your mask. The only way we're going to get through this, guys, is by continuing to follow the rules. And not only these rules will get us where we want to go, where at some point in time, maybe during the summer, maybe at the end of the summer, maybe this a fall of 2021, we can move past this and get our quote-unquote normal lives back. But it also saves lives. You are saving a life when you are practicing these really honestly simple protocols. I think what hurt me more than anything, Amy, was I can't remember what state, but the individual was outside of that state capitol building. They had like a mass burning jamboree, and a large population of children were there doing it. And, you know, children, we as adults, we are the leaders. We are the leaders. And they're going to follow what we do. So when we engage in behavior like this, this is unbecoming. All I can say is that, you know, the adults in the room, we have to do better. And we shouldn't be teaching that type of behavior to our children. Because God forbid these kids that get sick with COVID and or die. Then the same parents that was allowing their children to take off their mask and throw them in the dumpster so it can burn will be the first ones in front of a camera telling people, oh, we got to take this serious. It's like, well, you know, we were. The problem is you were not. And as a result of, you know, your dereliction of duty as a parent, you know, your child is dead. And when you look at it, they didn't have to die. So I would say to everybody out there that continues to wash their hands, practice social distancing, wear a mask, you know, great. Keep up the great work. I think I see the light, ladies and gentlemen. I see the light. So keep up the good work. We're almost there. This week, I didn't have a small business to highlight. But I will say, as I've said in the last couple of shows, is that small businesses are the backbone of this economy. This $1.9 trillion COVID stimulus plan that President Biden and the House and the Senate, all Democrats, that passed, you know, money has also coming out of that to help small businesses. So this is important. This is very, very important. And when you see one side of a political party that basically said no, they voted no, that they were not going to pass this bill. You know, and you, when you listen to some of the senators, they said, well, you know, it was too much, and we just didn't think it would cost this much. It was needed. This is one of the biggest pieces of legislation passed since Lyndon Johnson's War on Poverty and FDR's New Deal. And it's needed. It was needed. And Republicans did not step up when they had an opportunity. They shot down the $1.9 trillion COVID stimulus package, shot it down. But enthusiastically, you know, when Trump was still the president, they passed the $1.9 trillion tax breaks for the wealthy. Do you not get it yet, America? Do you not see the truth? Do you not see what the Republicans stand for? Because they don't stand for a you and me, the middle class, the working poor, the poor American. They don't care about small businesses. They don't care about that. They only care about big businesses and ensuring that wealthy people get tax breaks. You and I, the middle class, the working poor, poor people, we pay more taxes than millionaires and billionaires in this club, in this country. We pay more taxes than the millionaires and billionaires club, courtesy of the Republican Party. They've been doing it since 1981, when Reagan was president. I mean, at this stage, ladies and gentlemen, they've been doing it since 1981. I don't think the majority of millionaires and billionaires in this country don't even pay taxes. That's why Donald Trump was so brazen about, like, you know, no, me not paying taxes doesn't make, what do you say? It doesn't make me a bad person. It makes me a smart person. If, you know, his attitude is, if I can figure out ways to get around not paying taxes, that doesn't make me a bad guy. That doesn't make me the villain. That makes me smart. You know, he's basically saying, come on, middle class, working poor people, figure it out. But we can't figure it out because we're not going to get those tax breaks. We never have and we never will. So is it not resonating? Is it not clear now? Republicans don't care about you and I. Hell, they haven't cared about you and I probably since Lincoln. And that was a long, long time ago, and none of us was born there at that time. They talk about small government, but they will balloon, you know, the deficit to ensure that wealthy people get tax breaks. Even though many wealthy people have said, they've gone on record, stop giving us tax breaks. We don't need them. We don't need them. Somebody put some information out a couple of days ago, and it was showing what these guys, these billionaires paying taxes. So Jeff Bezos plays something like anywhere from, you know, about $5.4 billion, right? And you might say, well, Anthony, that's a lot. But he gets so many tax breaks. If he didn't get the tax breaks, you know what he'd be paying? He'd be paying double that. I mean, he'd be paying more, he'd be paying 95%. He'd be paying close to $120 billion in taxes. And you may say, wow, Anthony, that sounds like a whole lot. But that would be his fair share. That would be his 30%. So when you hear people keep talking about, oh, they want to tax the wealthy, they want to tax the wealthy, what we're saying is we want to tax the wealthy of what they're supposed to pay. If you and I pay 30% in taxes, the wealthy Americans don't pay that. They pay 10, 9, 8, 5, in many instances, 0. So if they paid their 30%, they pay just their 30%. The money that we could use to build bridges and new trains, new technology, But here we are. So it's time that we wake up and realize that, you know, the Republican Party is not the party of the middle class, the working poor, and the poor. It is the party for the wealthy and big business. Support small businesses because they are the backbone of this economy. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight's, well, I should say this evening's episode of Anthony Johnson Show, we're going to dive in, and this is going to be a two-parter, about racism and mental health. Now, I'm sure many of you watched the Oprah Winfrey interview with Meghan Markle and Prince Harry, and it was a lot of information that came out that people were just blown away from. And when Meghan Markle talked about, you know, at one point, you know, living in that castle with the king and the queen and everybody else, the royalty, she contemplated suicide because of the overt racism that she was dealing with. Now, although she didn't name names, all you have to do is read the tabloids, the British tabloids, and they didn't hide their racist feelings about Meghan Markle. People of color and all of our lives have been marginalized by those who are in powerful positions. Marginalized by those in power experience little difference from those whose lives have been so devalued. We experience overt racism and bigotry for far too often, which leads to mental health burden that is deeper than what others may face. Racism leads to a breakdown in our mental health. Racism is a mental health issue because racism causes trauma, pure and simple. It causes trauma. And trauma paints a direct line to mental illnesses, which need to be taken serious. Now, when she came out and talked about this, the guy, the journalist, Piers Morgan, basically questioned questioned that. His view was he didn't think she, you know, was suffering from mental disability. So all of a sudden now he can read minds. He didn't want to accept that she was suffering from mental illness. I mean, she was suffering from mental trauma. Excuse me. It does. Past trauma is prominently mentioned as the reason that people experience serious mental health conditions today. But because obvious forms of racism and bigotry are just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to racial trauma. So, ladies and gentlemen, every day people of color experience far more subtle traumas. People who avoid them and their neighborhoods out of ignorance and fear, banks and credit companies who won't lend them money or do so only at higher interest rates, mass incarceration of our peers, schools' curricula that ignore or minimize our contributions, our ancestors' contributions to our shared history, and racial profiling. These are all triggers for mental trauma. And ladies and gentlemen, there are different forms of racism. Yeah, you can't just say racism. We have to give a breakdown. So racism itself, the word racism is a broad term, and it describes the combination of race-based prejudice and power. Without the power, differential, one person, group, institution has more power than the other. That's kind of the definition of racism. But then now you get more specific. So we have systemic and structural racism. Systemic and structural racism has three components: history, culture, and institution/policy. Historical racism provides the framework for current racism. Any structure built on a foundation of history of racism will be a racist structure. Then you have culture, which is ever present in our day-to-day lives and is what allows racism to be accepted, to be normalized, to be perpetrated. Then you have the institutions and policy racial overtones. They make up the fundamental relationships and rules across society, which reinforces racism and give it societal legitimacy, which makes it so hard to dismantle. Then you have interpersonal racism. This is racism that happens between individual people when individual beliefs or prejudices become actions towards others. You know, the attitude may be some cultures may say, well, I don't want my daughter marrying a black man. Well, why not? She loved that black man. Say, oh, no, because they're lazy, they're womanizers, they abuse, you know, there's nothing good about black men. This is that interpersonal racism. Then we have what they call the institutional racism. Institutional racism occurs within and between institutions. Institutional racism is discriminatory treatment, unfair policies, and inequitable opportunities and impacts based on race produced and perpetrated by institutions, schools, mass media, etc. So schools won't, you know, enroll black people or people of color because of this racist ideology, this racist narrative that they have about us. Individuals within institutions take on the power of the institution when they act in ways that advantage and disadvantage people based on race. And you may be saying to yourself, well, hey, Anthony, that means, you know, that's old. Yeah, that happened in the 40s and the 50s and the 60s and the 70s. Hell, even in the 80s, but 2021? Yes, ladies and gentlemen, 2021. Institutional racism is extremely difficult to disband because it is so interwoven. It is interwoven into our businesses, into our organizations and companies and corporations. You ever pick up a paper or you read, you're on social media and you see that this person, the first Latino, the company has been around for 150 years, but this is the first time that they've hired somebody of a color. And you're like, wow, what took them so long? This is one thing that they do. This is what they do. So institutional racism, this is how that works. Then you have internalized racism. That's when racism and white supremacy affects the minds of black people, indigenous people, and people of color, to the point where they begin to believe that they are, in fact, inferior because of their own race. This can sometimes lead to the interracial hostility in which people of color treat other black people and people of color in a way that mirrors how white racists might treat them. So in other words, you have white people that will act, or you have black people that will treat black people or Latino or Native American or Asian will treat them in a racist stereotypical way, just the same way that white racists will treat them. Then you have reverse racism. Well, let me tell you something. This is a made-up term that shouldn't carry any actual value. It was a term created by and for white people who want to perpetrate racism by denying their privilege in all its form, and by claiming that fighting to improve the lives of black people and people of color is somehow racist against white people. So white people, some white people, not all, but some white people will use reverse racism by saying, oh, well, because you're trying to help black people and other people of color to be successful, you are somehow racist towards white people. Think about that. This term is invalid because racism in any form depends on the presence of a power differential. White people have historically always fallen on the powerful side rather than the powerless side. Reverse racism is therefore impossible as long as we live in a society that perpetuates white supremacy. I said this in recent shows about America is truly becoming a multicultural country, a multicultural nation. But you have elected officials that stand up in our government and say multicultural in America is wrong. Pure and simple. They say it's wrong. And have you thought about it? Why is that wrong? Why living in a multicultural society, why is it wrong? Why, how could it be wrong? It can't be. But for those who have been in power, there are white people who have been in power, still in power. Institutional society, they're in power. Businesses, the whole gamut, they are still in power. Even though Latino population is the biggest population in America, white people still control roughly everything. And those white individuals, they don't want a multicultural society because they feel like their power is being taken away from them. So I can say to those individuals, those white people who are racist, who don't believe in a multicultural society, I would say to them, okay, you guys had 100% of the power for generations. Now you have 95% of the power. The other 5% is broken up with the rest of the ethnic groups, black, Latino, Asian, Native American, right? You still hold 95% of the power. And they'll tell you, no, that's not enough. We want all the power. By having a multicultural society, dilutes our power. That's what they'll say. Since it dilutes the power. See, we didn't have a multicultural society. If it was, you know, black and white, some Hispanics here, some Native Americans over there, a little Asian over there, you know, a little black there, we would have still have 100% of the power. But no, now that it's multicultural, we've seen an increase in the Latino population, a small increase in the black population, and the Native American population, and the Asian community population. So it's diluting our power. This is what they would say to me. This is what they would say to you. So we don't want a multicultural. We want to be the dominant force like it's been in America from day one. We do not want to share power. I would say to them, you ain't sharing power. If you hold 95% of the power, how are you sharing? Sharing will be 50-50. They don't want that. That's why they hate the fact that America is truly becoming a multicultural society. The next term is oppression. The use of power with oppression by a system, institution, group, or individual to dominate over another, or the refusal of a system, institution, group, individual who possesses this power to challenge that domination. It's basically what I was saying with regards to reverse racism. Oppression is that you have one group that rules over everyone else. They write policy, and every policy that they write is going to be beneficial to them and a liability to the rest of us. Then you have racial trauma. Simply traumatization that results from experiencing racism in any of many forms. Importantly, this doesn't have to be one major isolated event, but rather it can result from an accumulation of experiences like daily subtle acts of discrimination or microaggressions. You know, in my new book, A War on All Fronts Revisited, 2005 to 2020, I talk about that. I talk about my experience of dealing with racism and dealing with cops who was racist. Cops who pointed a gun at me and my three friends coming home on one rainy night from seeing a friend of ours that we grew up with. Never lowering your weapons, not at any time. Even after they brought the white woman out of the car, and she looked at us and said, it wasn't them. The police officer tried to get her to say it was us while still pointing the guns at me and my friends. We were in eighth grade, traumatizing. Even at 52, that still haunts me. That woman saved our lives because in her anger of being robbed, she could have said, yeah, it's them. So that trauma lingers. That does it for, as I said, this is a two-parter because it's a great deal of information dealing with racism and mental health. And I don't want to run through this. I want to have a good conversation. So next week we'll pick up on this. And we'll finish it up. But ladies and gentlemen, there is a lot of help out there for you. If you feel like the world is too much, and you're feeling suicidal, you feel that you just need a change, you need help, please do not deny yourself. You don't have to keep a stiff upper lip when you need help. You call out. You call out to help, and help will be there. Friends, families, or the experts, they're ready night and day to be able to help you, to guide you through this. What Meghan Markle experienced, no one should have to experience it. But we do know one thing, that African Americans, Latinos, Native Americans and Asian Americans suffer greatly from mental trauma. I want to thank you for tuning in to the Anthony Johnson Show. I ended with, we can be the outcome. We must help everyone. We must be the side to soothe the soul of mental trauma. Let's work together, guys. We can do it. Good night.